about who did what and what they knew. Charles, I gotta wonder, you know, why would a person like Senator Mitch McConnell hire Mr. Casseri when it had already been known that he was under a cloud of suspicion in regards to this bribery scandal of the Iowa State Senator? It was already out there. And then he goes and hires him and pays him through his corporation in an obvious attempt to make sure that there was no campaign finance report with Mr. Casseri's name directly on it.
Right. Bill, I don't know what to say, but stay on top of it. And we got to keep our eyes open, and that's why we talk about these things. I think we're going to be hard-pressed to see anything coming out of Fox News on this, but there's always the hope. You know what I mean? Meantime,
well, I'd like to just see him to come out of the regular the media, the reputable media, and have them go out here and start asking these questions.
There you go. Bill, we got to get going. It's always a pleasure. How do we find out more about you and the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
KYAFLCIO.org. KYAFLCIO.org will get you to our website, Charles.
Absolutely, brother. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. We enjoy your company. In the meantime, folks, do me a favor. Go to our website, www.theunionedge.com. Download the free app for your iPhone or your Android. You can listen to this program live anywhere in the world. You can listen to podcasts. And it can help you do all kinds of other wonderful things. More about that to follow later on. Hey, right now, we're talking with our friends from Progress Michigan. We've got Lonnie Smith on the line. He's the executive director. Lonnie, welcome to Union Edge.
Yeah, Charles, it's great to be here.
Hey, thank you very much. Lonnie, tell us a little bit about Progress Michigan, what you guys do, and what you're engaged in right now.
Yeah, Progress Michigan is a 501c4 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to hold elected officials accountable and to promote progressive ideas for Michigan.
And, you know, you guys, you're acting a little bit like a watchdog sometimes, yeah? You know?
Yeah, yeah. We pride ourselves on being a government watchdog, and we've been using the Freedom of Information Act here in the state to be able to provide records and public records for you know, accountability purposes, and also just so that the people of the state of Michigan know what's going on in the state.
And talk to us a little bit about, for those who don't know, what Freedom of Information Act is, or a FOIA Act request is.
Yeah, the Freedom of Information Act is our public records law here in Michigan that allows us to request any kind of public documents, so emails between you know, state departments or different folks like the Attorney General's office. And we are able to make those requests. We call them FOIA requests here in the state. I know they have different names in different states. Mm-hmm. And then we can get access to those public records in some cases. Here in Michigan, our legislature and governor are expressly exempt from our FOIA laws. So depending on, you know, the state departments and those kinds of things are the different types of records.
Wait a minute. Do they get taxpayer funding?
Yeah.
I mean, if they get paid by the if we're buying them lunch, guess what? We want to know what you're doing between 8 and 12, okay? It's obscene. It's absolutely obscene that they get away with those kinds of things. And I don't care which side of the aisle came up with that knuckleheaded idea. Lonnie, I'm sorry, man. You're nonpartisan. I'm a little bit more partisan, but.
Well, that's all right. Yeah, we definitely agree. You know, we've been fighting for changes to the FOIA laws. We think that it's absolutely ridiculous that the groups of people who are actually making the laws would be exempt from Freedom of Information Act, where we could actually get public records.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, we've been fighting for changes.
You know, and it's the damnedest thing in the world. We hear politicians all the time talking about, oh, we got to drug test all those people collecting welfare, you know, because, well, I get more votes when I talk about that. And then you turn around. Well, okay, you're collecting government funding. Can we drug test you? Oh, no. No, we can't do that. But that's another story. So
totally
we'll talk.
Different story then, right?
Yeah, right. So in any case, you're out there. You're trying to do your job. You're trying to be a watchdog and keep an eye on things. And that's a wonderful thing, and I respect that greatly. I'm a former civil servant. I get it. It's important to – but you've sent in FOIA requests. And with most FOIA requests, the government has the right to say, hey, you know what? If you need 50 copies, you know, I got to charge you 10 cents a copy. You know, that's reasonable. It's in the best interest of the taxpayers. But what are you running into?
Well, in Michigan, they can actually charge you for the labor cost as well. And what we're running into, Charles, is that often that can be used as a deterrent because when you get a cost estimate, about what it would cost to do the search or to prepare your FOIA for you based on the records that you request, then, you know, you're a little stuck if you can't pay that bill. And so, you know, we ran into about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, we actually ran into where the Department of Treasury did the same thing, where we sent in a FOIA request, and they sent us this astronomical bill just to search for the records. So not to make copies, not any of that. Just to search to see if there were any records. And in that case, the Department of Treasury actually tried to charge us $52,000.
Are you paying for somebody's entire wages for a year? Because that sounds like what a GS-5 or GS-7 clerk would make in Michigan.
Yeah, you would think so. So our law actually says that it should be based on the amount of time, and then you multiply that by the lowest qualified employee's hourly wage, and then you would multiply that by 50% to pay for fringe benefits as well. So what they were basically saying in that case was that it was going to take something like 6 hours per name to search. And we all know, Charles, that if you're checking emails, you could go into your Gmail right now and type in a name or a search topic and pull that up within seconds. It may take you a little bit of time to go through and see if those emails match, but, you know, we're not talking hours.
Yeah,
we're talking minutes.
Yeah, but Lonnie, so. I was a civil servant. I wasn't a politician. I can't tell you what politicians do. So, okay.
Well, that's a good point. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. After you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord.
Hello and welcome to Prison Pipeline. Prison Pipeline is a program which hopes to educate us every week on different issues regarding the prison industrial complex and solutions to incarceration. Today we are going to be talking about homelessness and encounters with the police. We did have a guest scheduled to arrive, a homeless man. And unfortunately, he has not come, but he did send us some audio of his arrest. And so he's asked us to go ahead and play that. He wants to remain anonymous, but he has given me permission to share parts of his story. Obviously, it's a very traumatizing experience to encounter the police and to be arrested. And so we're going to be starting off with a clip of his arrest, and then I'm going to share some of his personal testimony that he's given about his experiences with the police here in Portland. And then we're going to go into the broader issue of street harassment of homeless people in Portland. And this is a live show, so if you'd like to call in and share your stories, or if you want to talk about homelessness, or if you want to talk about prison, feel free to give us a call. Our number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Could we play that clip now? Thanks.
I haven't.
So now you're trespassing.
No, I'm not trespassing.
Yes, you are.
No, dude, I've been sitting here listening to you try and harass me about who I am.
You're sitting down in the park after it's closed.
No, I'm not. I'm sitting here. I'm listening to you talk to me and harass me about sitting. Yeah, well, then I should be able to get up and leave. Okay?
You
done already told me I'm not supposed to be in the park.
Yes, and I asked you your name.
So you're not getting that. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yes, you were.
No, I'm not.
You're trespassing.
No, I'm not. I'm sitting here listening to this man talk to me.
You were trespassing
for 15 minutes. You told me I'm not supposed to be in the park. You brought me to the attention now.
Yes.
This moment right now. So now I'm aware and I can get up and walk away. I'm not doing anything wrong. That's what I told you. You say okay.
And I said,
the park is closed.
No, I'm not.
Now you're saying I'm trespassing.
No, I said that in the beginning.
No, you didn't. You said the park is closed. I'm not supposed to be in the park.
Okay. So what does that mean to you?
Get up and leave. The park is closed.
I said after you give me your name.
No, you didn't say that.
Yeah, I said,
you're retaliated.
Your name? No, I
didn't. Yeah, you did.
No, I asked
you're
your
retaliated
name right
now.
Away.
No, but you're not getting my name.
You're
not getting my name.
Why not?
Because I have done nothing wrong. I'm sitting
in the park.
So what? There's people going by.
And we're going this way. I told you can walk through the park. You can't.
Well, so then I can get up and walk away. You told me.
You
told me it's closed. No.
Yeah.
I sat here. I sat down and I dozed off. So I'm not doing anything wrong.
You're sleeping in the park.
No, so what? So what? That's not against the law.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's not camping.
The signs.
No, you brought me. You woke me up.
You were here. Yes, I woke you up after the park.
No, I'm not camping. I'm not camping. You know I'm not camping. Look, guys, no tents. No tents.
You're in the park and it's closed.
So what? So is a lot of other people. There's a lot of
other
people.
Other people.
No, you're not. You're talking to me.
We started down there. We're driving down here. We're talking to
everybody. So you woke me up and everybody even got up. You ain't asked them their name. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Everyone who's been sitting down stopped. We've been talking to them.
No, I wasn't.
Then how do you know we didn't ask?
Well, because, hey, you're lying. I think you're lying. Okay? Now what?
I'm not.
Okay, well, then you're not getting my name. You're not getting my name. I'm not doing nothing wrong.
Well, you are. You're in the park when it's closed.
No, it's wrong. No, it's not.
Sure it is.
Yes, it is.
No, okay, well, then, you know what?
What?
Take me to jail then.
So, that was an encounter with the police, which is not at all, an unusual encounter in Portland. With the police. And I think that the point of the show tonight is to really talk about what's going on our streets, what's going on here in Portland, and what is the experience like, for homeless people who already have so many challenges and so many struggles. And then on top of that, they have these ongoing experiences of harassment with the police. Again, tonight is a live call-in show. So if you'd like to call in, our number is 503-231-8187. And I'm going to spend part of the next 20 minutes trying to unpackage what we just listened to, because I have my own experience of that story. And I have my own understanding of it. So I want to tell you a little bit about the man who was arrested. And I've promised that he's going to be anonymous because he doesn't want anyone to know his name. As he made very clear, that's his name is his identity. And it's part of his dignity as a person to choose to share his story when he wants to share it and who he wants to share it with. And he has given me permission to share some parts of the story tonight and to talk about what we just listened to. So my name, by the way, is Emma. My name is Emma, and I am happy to share who I am because I have the privilege of not being harassed by the police, which is a real privilege. I mean, I understand it comes with a certain level of responsibility, though. It comes with a responsibility to tell stories, to talk about the things that we treat as invisible every day, So when you're driving down the street and you see the guys standing over on the street corner and they're holding the signs and they're asking for money, or when you're downtown and you're over by Burnside and it's time for the feed, or if it's time for, you know, shelter, or if you're driving under the bridges and you see people, you know, these are people who are part of our community. We see them everywhere we go. And, you know, I'd like to share a few statistics about homelessness before we begin to unpackage this show. So first, this is from the National Study on Homelessness and the Prison Population. According to most recent statistics, 9% of all adults who are in state or federal penitentiaries experienced episodes of homelessness in the last year prior to arrest. This is 4 to 6 times the estimated rate in the adult U.S. general population, allowing for age, race, ethnicity, and gender. In comparison to other inmates, homeless inmates were more likely to be incarcerated for a property crime, but they also have had previous experiences with the criminal justice system, involvement in both property and violent crimes, and they're more likely to suffer from mental health and/or substance abuse problems, and also more likely to be unemployed or living in a low income. So those are some really startling and very realistic statistics about why people end up in jail who are homeless and what some of the causes are. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the story of this man who works with me sometimes, and you know, things that he shared with me about his experiences with the police. So this man, he works with me, and he's very, very talented. He's a very gifted gardener, and he's a wonderful community activist, and he's a really beautiful human being. And he's well known in Portland. He's well known in the Portland community. He's known for his involvement in the year-long vigil to end the camping ban. And he's also known in the community for his work with The Feed. The Feed is something that happens every Wednesday night here in Portland, and it's an opportunity to provide lots of really good, nutritious food for people who are homeless, and also give them some entertainment and some sense of solidarity. So he's really well known in the community. He's a really he's a hard worker. He's a brilliant man, just so bright and so intelligent and very creative. You know, he's definitely someone that I really admire. I've seen the kind of work that he does in the community. I see how well respected he is. I've been all over Portland with this man, and wherever I go with him, people know him, and he's got a beautiful smile, and he's just... you know, he's a really great person, and he's also homeless. He camps out, and he does what a lot of people in Portland streets do. You know, he gets by how he can, and part of how he gets by is sometimes he works with me, and I'm a gardener. And the night that this piece was being played, he was getting arrested, and he had just worked with me that day, and I just paid him. And, you know, one of the things, just to unpackage the story of that encounter, what you're hearing right now. So homeless people in Portland, don't have a lot of options for what to do for our basic needs. You know, everyone has the basic needs. They have a need to sleep. They have a need to eat. They have a need to take a shower. You know, they have all the basic human needs that everyone has. But our city makes it very difficult for people to get any of those needs met. And one of the pressing needs that homeless people always have is the need to sleep. So if you think about it, if you are homeless, then where do you sleep? Because whether you're homeless or not, your body still needs to sleep about every 16 hours or so. So, I think what he did that night was he went to the park and he was sitting on a park bench, because this has happened four times prior. And he's sitting on a park bench and he's dozing off. And, you know, he's kind of nodding off. And as he nods off, the police come up and they tell him that it's, you know, like 1 minute after 10 o'clock or it's 30 seconds after 10 o'clock. And you're camping. You know, you're in the park, you're trespassing, you're camping, and you're under arrest. So that's basically kind of how that story goes. And it's, you know, it's a pretty routine harassment that the police do. But the ways in which the police harass the homeless are really pernicious. I mean, the police, they don't just arrest homeless people. They treat homeless people like they're animals. They humiliate them. They harass them. You know, they're always asking them lots of questions. They search everything in their bodies. And on this particular instance, when he was arrested, they took his money. So, you know, I had just paid him. He had worked with me for the day. And, you know, they took the money that he had just earned that day. And what they do is that they, you know, they arrest homeless people and then they process them. They put them in the jail for like a night or maybe more if they have outstanding warrants. And then eventually they let them go, but they give them fines. So they'll charge them with, you know, loitering or sleeping in the park or camping, you know, resisting arrest, which is a more serious offense. And they'll fine them. And so now they have this debt. And, you know, in addition to being homeless, they have this debt. And so the next time that they go through the system, if they haven't paid their debt, then they have their money taken from them. So if they have any money on them, it goes towards paying fines from previous arrests. And I mean, if you can imagine, like every time that you went to bed in your, if, you know, every time you went to bed at your house, like imagine if like every third or fourth time someone came into your house and they arrested you when you were trying to sleep and then you got fined for sleeping. You know, that's kind of what the experience of being homeless is like. So, anyways, that's kind of the story of what happened in this particular situation. I do have some more statistics here that I'd like to share about homelessness. Here in Portland, according to the Portland City Government, on any given night, about 4,000 people sleep on the streets or in shelters across Portland. Homeless people can be adults, young people, couples, or families with children. They're living on the streets, either temporarily or long-term, for a variety of reasons. They may be homeless because of an unrelated mental illness, a physical disability, domestic violence, the loss of a job, or drug addiction. They may be experiencing a financial crisis, or they may have been evicted from their home for the first time. They may cycle from homelessness to housing and back to homelessness again, or they may be chronically homeless, having lived on the streets for many months or years. Portland and Multnomah County offer some services for homeless people, but the city and council, you know, I'm not going to read any more of that because that's from the Portland City Government. I think that the very first part of that is actually really, really insightful, but I don't think that Portland is really doing enough to deal with the issue of homelessness. So what are your thoughts on this? If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. Have you experienced homelessness yourself? Have you been harassed by the police? You know, have you had experiences with intimidation? Do you know someone in your life who is at risk of being homeless? Here's something from the National Coalition for the Homeless on Homelessness. There are two trends that are largely responsible for the rise in homelessness over the past 20 to 25 years: a growing shortage of affordable rental housing and a simultaneous increase in poverty. The below is a current overview of poverty and housing statistics, as well as factors contributing to homelessness. Recently, foreclosures have increased the number of people who experience homelessness. The National Coalition for the Homeless released a report indicating a 32% jump in the number of foreclosures in the early 2000s. And in addition to this, most people who are homeless are already experiencing chronic poverty. So these are some of the factors that are lead to the experience of homelessness. But then there's also the issue of mental illness. Mental illness is one of the factors that we experience in the community, that we see in the community. Untreated mental illness is something that also contributes to the problem of homelessness. So anyways, if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 503-231-8187. And we're talking tonight about the issue of homelessness and experiences with the criminal justice system. So I'd like to unpackage a little bit more about that interview, that piece that we played earlier with the gentleman. He's told me a lot of other aspects of his experience of being homeless. He's been arrested 4 times in the last 3 or 4 years since he's been living on the streets. And usually what happens is that he's in the park, he's downtown, he's taking a break or he's resting, and the police come up and they tell him that he's trespassing. Another thing that the police do on a pretty regular basis to homeless people is they'll give them like a notice. So like, for instance, if you're in the park one night and the police find you there, they might give you a note. And the note says that the next time they see you in the park, they're going to arrest you. And this happens over and over again. And this is part of how this is how he's been arrested. And when you have that kind of constant experience of harassment by the police, I think that it has an effect on your psyche. I mean, I really think it does. But I mean, when you think about it, where do you go? I mean, do you go, you know, if you try to go live in places that aren't necessarily safe, then you risk the dangers of living in those kinds of environments. So a lot of people feel safer, like in places where there are lots of other people, because there's safety in that experience. But at the same time, that also puts you at risk of encounters with the police. And when you have those encounters with the police, then you're a lot more likely to, you know, be swept into the system. And once you're swept into the system, then you have a record. And like when I was reading the statistics earlier about how many people experience homelessness and facts about people who have been incarcerated in the federal and state system, 4 to 6 times as many people in the federal system are, you know, likely to have experienced homelessness as members of the general population. So it creates a mentality. I mean, the experience of homelessness actually creates an expectation of incarceration. And so it creates this cycle, which, you know, we just come to expect. We think, well, either someone should be on the streets begging and scraping by, or they should be in prison. And we begin to think that ourselves, we internalize those expectations ourselves. And then we also project those on the people that we see. And so I think that, you know, we're getting near the end of the show. And I'm really sorry that the gentleman wasn't able to come tonight. I think that it would have been a really good discussion. But I think I understand why he's not here. It's very challenging. It's very intimidating to talk about this experience. It's a real emotional burden trying to unpackage what it's like to face an authority figure, someone who has the ability to kill you, to tase you, and who you've probably experienced before. You probably know the person who is arresting you. And I understand how difficult that can be to talk about that. And I really want to thank the person who was going to be my guest for even having the courage to consider coming down to talk about this, because I think that his absence is kind of reflective of the absence of, you know, the homeless people in our lives. We see them, but we don't really see them. It's like they don't really exist to us. And so you know, as we're driving around or walking around in Portland, we don't even really acknowledge their existence. And so in some ways, I think it's really fitting that my guest isn't here, because his, you know, not being here is really symbolic of how we, you know, see homelessness, and we really do need to see it. So I hope that you got a little bit of learning from the piece with his arrest. And I really thank you for listening to Prison Pipeline, and stay tuned for more programming on KBOO. Thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Festicide, a three-day anti-festival taking place in venues all over Portland on August 21st through 23rd. Festicide celebrates Portland's DIY culture with an emphasis on punk, metal, and extreme music. There will be 9 shows across town over the three-day weekend, with performances by Danova, Uncool Niece, Jenito and the Spurs, Rabbits, The Woolen Men, VX Gas Attack, and many, many more. Again, that's Festicide, August 21st through 23rd at venues all over Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, jazz lovers. This is Mike. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast that just went live on KBOO website. It's called Unsung Heroes of Jazz, where every week we'll feature an artist who recorded between the 1940s and the 1960s, so-called golden era of jazz, but for whatever reason never really got the recognition they so richly deserved. We'll tell you a little bit about them, play some of their music. Some of them you will have heard of, some of them you won't,